So this is the second of our 3 weeks that we are taking the time and almost a little bit of luxury. You know, ever since the beginning of Pesach, the theme is always rush, and we're rushed in Mitzrayim when we're rushed every year preparing for Pesach. But this year, Baruch Hashem, we got 3 weeks. We can really take some time and some space and actually do what the Rambam told us we should and delve into the core part of the Haggadah, which always gets overlooked. The actual passage of Arami Ovirabi, which we're supposed to analyze at length. Last week we looked at the very first pasuk. We were able to have easily an hour of material on just one pasuk. Tonight we're going to take the middle two pasukim. So it's just a quick refresher. When the farmer comes to the Yerushalayim with his bikurim, so he has five sentences he's supposed to say. First one, he says, "We came down to Mitzrayim." As we talked about last week. Second pasuk says the Mitzrim oppressed us. That's what I'm talking about now. The third pasuk, he says, "We davened to Hashem, and Hashem heard us." That's what we'll also talk about tonight. The fourth pasuk is going to be Hashem took us out. That's what we'll talk about next week. And then the fifth pasuk, he says, "Now Baruch Hashem, I'm here in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm able to bring some of the produce straight to the Beis Hamikdash." The theme of gratitude, which we talked about also last week, and I think is also going to come up tonight. Tonight we're talking about the middle two psukim. Vayareu osenu hamitzrim vayanunu vayetnu aleinu avodah kasha. The mitzrim were evil to us. They afflicted us and they gave us terrible work. Vanitzak al Hashem elokei vaseinu. We cried out to Hashem. Vayishma Hashem eskolenu vayaras anina veslachatzenu. He heard our voice and he saw our affliction and our pressure. It's amazing how condensed the Chumash is able to make the whole story. And now we take what's radically condensed, and we will once again begin to build it up. So hopefully everyone has a Haggadah. And just in case you don't, so once again, I'll put in the chat the link to the Safaria, just so it's available for anyone who wants it. I just think it will be easier just to have as a quick reference. But we're not going to do screen share for the most part tonight, except for one quick exception when we get up to it. So the first pasuk, and the first line, really the first pasuk of the that we have to discuss, Vayireu Osenu HaMitzrim. So the clear question which comes out of this is that it seems awfully redundant. On the one hand, we take all of the evil that the Egyptians did to us. So many decrees in the psukim, in the midrashim. We could talk about the slavery. We could talk about the different forms of slavery, what they did to the children, what they did to Jewish husbands and wives. There is so much we can talk about. Somehow it gets condensed into just one pasuk, right? So it's amazing how stripped down it becomes. Especially given how stripped it is even more surprising that we're redundant. You know, it's one thing to just, we know redundancy in general is something that we're supposed to look at very carefully in the Chumash because nothing is redundant. But especially, particularly when we expect to have a whole lot, there's a whole lot to say, and the Chumash barely gives us anything, and yet still there's redundancy, that really is something that, as Chazal loved to say, Omer Darsheni, demands that we darshan, demands that we think and see what exactly is going on. And for the Torah to say, Vayareu osanu hamitzrim, the Egyptians did evil to us, Vayamnunu, and they afflicted us, Vayanu alenu avodah kasha, they gave us terrible labor, is redundant. We know, we were enslaved in Egypt. Okay, well, they were evil to us and they afflicted us and they gave us labor. By definition, if they afflicted us, then they were evil. You don't need to tell me via rape. You know, it's not enslaving innocent people. There's no way that you could do such a thing without being evil. We know that they gave us terrible labor. So just tell us that. Why the redundancy, again, especially given the fact that there's so much more the Chumash could have said. So that is, I think, the primary issue that the Haggadah has in mind when we're going to darshan this, because the Haggadah is going to take apart pasuk phrase by phrase in that pasuk to see different facets, different things to shed light on, and the Mefarshim, as we'll also see, are going to take that then to the next level. So, of those three phrases, we have Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim, they did evil to us. Then Vayanunu, they afflicted us, and then Vayanu Av Alina Avodah Kasha, they gave us terrible labor. Take on the first phrase. Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim, the Egyptians did evil to us. Okay? Again, that's how we're translating it for now. What does the Haggadah say? So the Haggadah says, Kamash Ne'amar, We see this in the Pasuk. Hava nischak malah, when Paro says to his advisors, let us outsmart Bnei Yisrael. Pen yerbev, ayak yisugan malchama, there's going to be war, and then Bnei Yisrael will join the other side. So the problem here is that the Haggadah has not only not helped things, the Haggadah has made things worse. Let's think for a second. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim, the Egyptians did evil to us. What does that mean? That's such a vague, amorphous phrase. It can mean anything. Answers the Haggadah. Look at the Pasuk. When Paro tells his advisors, Hava nischak malo, let's outsmart Bnei Yisrael. There's no affliction happening here. Nothing has been done to us yet. Paro is just in the boardroom with his advisors deciding what to do with the Jewish. That doesn't seem to have anything to do with the phrase Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. So it doesn't clarify anything. I still need to understand why this is here, why this is new. I know the Egyptians did something evil to us. The question is there. I do need a drasha, but the drasha that God gives us seems completely irrelevant. So what on earth is going on over here? And so there are kind of two main theories. One I understand much better. The Ritva, who's one of the giants of the Rishonim. So he comments on this, and he says, you have to read the Pasuk in sequence. What it is Vayareu osanu, they did evil to us, and Vayanu, and then they afflicted us. We started by asking, why these different pieces over here? Isn't it all redundant? And the Ritva says, no, it's not redundant. The slavery in Egypt went from bad to worse. What he's doing here is he's basing himself off of the analysis that the Ramban has, the Ramban ala Torah, in the first parak of Shemos, where the Ramban asks, how did we get to the point where you have the Egyptians throwing, Jewish babies into the river? And the Ramban argues, if you read the Pesukim carefully, the bondage happens step by step. So first, the Jews have to provide forced labor for Paro. That's pretty standard. That can happen to anybody. So we talked about this last week. King Shlomo has Bnei Yisrael doing that. A king is able to do that. Then that gets cranked up to the affliction which is happening. Then all of a sudden we're getting beaten, we're getting whipped, we're getting oppressed. And then it gets cranked up even more until the actual, the episode of the midwives where Paro attempts to have the babies snuffed out before they're born. And then when that doesn't work, we move on to the decree against the babies. So the Ritva says that's what's happening here. Vayareu, vayanunu. We start with low evil, and then it got ramped up until actual affliction and avodah kasha, which we need to understand what that is. It's a progression, it's a ramping up. Okay, now that doesn't explain, the Ritva does not relate to the actual Pasuk the Haggadah quoted. Again, what does they did evil to us have anything to do with Hava Neschak Malo, when Paro's advisors say, let's outsmart Bnei Yisrael. So here, many of the Mepharshim, the Netziv says it really most beautifully, but the Rashbats, the Barbanel, Me'am Loes, many other Mepharshim as well. I think Rav has this also. And I'll say, no, we've been mistranslating the Pasuk the whole entire time. Vayareu osanu hametzrim. We've been translating as they did evil to us. I have the fancy GPS tarach here, which you can kind of see even though I'm blurry. Actually got this for $2 at the YU Hefker Sfarim sale. So how do they translate Vayareu osanu? Let's see, perfectly. Yeah, awesome. The Egyptians dealt harshly with us, right? So they were evil to us. Problem is, that's not really correct, because if that was the case, all of a freshman point out, it shouldn't have said Vayareu osanu. If you wanted to say they did evil to us, they were harsh to us, it wouldn't be Vayareu osanu. What would it be? Vayareu lanu.
Lanu.
Lanu, right? That's how you say they did bad to us. Vayareu lanu. Why is it Vayareu osanu? What does that even mean? And they all explain that the prerequisite for the Egyptians to oppress us was they needed to think of us as the bad guys. Vayareu osanu means they made us out to be evil. In their minds, they said, these Jews are ingrates. These Jews are traitors. These Jews are fifth column. Hava nischak malo, pen yerbev, haya ki sikrana melchama, v'nosaf kamhu, also nenu. There's going to be a war. We let them graciously come into our land. And look how they're going to repay us. They're going to just ally with their enemies. once they made us out to be evil, once we had Vayareu Osanu, they made us evil, now they can do inhuman things to us. Right? They were a civilized society to a degree. It was perverse, but they had an impressive civilization. They were not going to just all of a sudden turn around and throw babies in the river unless there was a narrative they can tell themselves beforehand, dehumanizing us in the beginning. And then once that's done, once Vayareu Osanu, once they did that, then all bets are off. Very, very powerful idea. Very, very compelling, and explains exactly what the Haggadah is getting. That is the first step. And we have to appreciate, I think this is something, this is another point that the Ramban really makes a lot over as well, that the Egyptians, not all of it came easy. You know, the Ramban kind of struggles for a little bit. Says it's a little bit strange. This is going to be a theme. It's actually going to come up in the next pasuk as well. Like the Egyptians are throwing babies into the river, but it doesn't really seem to last. So, you know, for example, in Perek Beis, when the Jews cry out to Hashem, they don't cry out because of the murder of their children. They cry out to Hashem because of the slavery. The Ramban argues that even Egypt couldn't have an outright on the books decree to throw babies into the river. It was like a rumor Paro let leak that the royal government might be okay, might turn a blind eye, might be kind of happy if by accidents happen to Jewish babies. You think about the episode of the midwives. The Ramban points out, why did Paro have to be so sneaky? Just kill the babies, like order a genocide. Why do we have all this subterfuge? As he says, even in Egypt, I don't want to say they were good. They weren't good at all. But even, I guess this is a scary thing, evil people, right, and true wicked still has some essence of humanity. And how could they overcome that in order to do what they did to us? Step one was Vayarei Osan HaMitzer. They thought of us as terrible, evil, and betraying us. Then that let them do what they were going to do. And then Tziv says it's specifically the idea of kafui to, right? Specifically the idea of being ingrateful that they accuse us with. We let them into Egypt, and now look what they do. They repay us by allying with our enemies. We talked last week, the whole theme of the Haggadah is gratitude, how grateful we are. They were the ones who forgot Yosef one generation later. We're the ones who 3,000 years later are still thanking Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim. There is no limit to gratitude, right? That was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's point. That Paro thought there's a limit. Okay, we let them in. They got a tax break for a generation because Yosef saved the country. One generation's over. It's time for them to become tax-paying members of society like everybody else. Chai Yisrael says, no, there is no limit to gratitude. We'll thank Hashem and thank Hashem every single day till the end of time for what he did to us taking out of Mitzrayim. Now the Egyptians, you want to talk about, you know, anyone who has like a psychological perspective here, you want to talk about projection. You know, how did the Egyptians project the way that they are able to be so ingrateful to us, take the nation who saved them and oppressed them as slaves, is by themselves accusing us of ingratitude. And that's the point that Tziv makes. Look at them coming into our country and allying with our enemies. Vayarei Osanu HaMitzrim, that is what allows them to go off to the races. The Maharal and Soloveitchik have one additional point for us to consider, though, which is there's a reason why the pasuk is written in a way that, as compelling as the answer was, Vayareu Osanu, you know, Tanakh here, JPS Tanakh is wrong. It doesn't mean that they were harsh to us. It means that they made us out to be evil. But if you have to think for a second before you realize that. Your first surface glance, you say, oh yeah, the Egyptians were evil to us. Maral and the Rav both write that slandering us is in and of itself an act of evil. So we might look at the Haggadah and we might say, I don't understand. The evil was Hava Nischak Malo. The evil was them sitting around at the boardroom deciding what to do when they said that we're going to ally with their enemies. Isn't the evil the slavery, the killing? They write, actually, this was not only them making us out to be evil. The slander in and of itself is evil, is harmful to Bnei Yisrael. It's a point to think about. It's not just, you know, words are one thing and deeds are another thing. The words, the slander, the falsehoods are already in and of itself the first act of evil, the first act of harm. And there's one more point that I want to just throw out there. This is just such a timeless, frighteningly timeless idea of, you know, theme of anti-Semitism. You think about what the Egyptians are saying. Now, on the one hand, they're saying that the Jews are a threat. Rav v'atzum mimenu. They're bigger and stronger than us. They're far more mighty. The Jews run the world, is what Paro and his advisors are saying. And then what does Paro say literally in the next breath? Right after he says, Hine am b'nei Yisrael rav v'atzum mimenu, the Jews are greater and more numerous than we are. Hava neschak malo, let's outsmart him and we can enslave him. What do they always think? What do our enemies think every generation? Somehow simultaneously, they think that the Jews run the world and we're this terribly evil, nefarious, absolutely nothing redeeming, all-powerful enemy. And yet at the same time, oh, we're weak and we're vulnerable and our enemies can take us. You know, so Paro and his people can at the same time, in one breath, say, Rav Yatsu Mimenu, they're too strong, they're such a terrible threat. But at the same time, they can say, oh, look at these puny Jews. You know, there's a few thousand of them. We should have no problem enforcing slavery, right? It's like this contradiction that's at the heart of Jew hatred in every single generation. Okay, so that is the first phrase, Vayirei Osun HaMitzrim, and now we can understand why it's not redundant at all and why it is the perfect introduction to what they are about to do to us. Okay. Next phrase of the pasuk, we know we have three, is Vaya'anunu, they afflict us. What does the Haggadah say? They afflicted us. Kamash ne'amar, Vayasimu alav sarei misim. They put tax officials over us. Lima'an anoso besiv losam. In order to afflict them with their pains. And we built the cities, Vayiven arei miskanos leparawas, re'es pison ve'es ramses. Perek Aleph, pasuk Yud Aleph in Sefer Shemos. So here, we know Vayanunu usually means to afflict. And on Yom Kippur, the Mishnah says, we have the five Inuyim. We have the five afflictions. The Inisem Esnaf Shoseichem. We afflict ourselves on Yom Kippur. So if the Torah already tells me, again in Sefer Devarim, that they afflicted us, Vayanunu, what is the Haggadah adding and explaining by telling us, Vayasimu Alav Sarimisim, Leman Anoso Besiv Losam, that Paro, they have officials over us, in order to afflict us with our pains. So on the pshat level, you already have this in the Ibn Ezra, some of the other Rishonim as well, and Rashbats here in his Haggadah. So they say that actually this means something else. Inui doesn't have to mean affliction. It can also mean this is going to come up in the next pasuk when Haggadah talks about precious derech eretz. It can also mean that the Egyptians forcibly separated husbands and wives. Inui. The truth is, this is one of the afflictions of Yom Kippur. It's marital relations are forbidden on Yom Kippur. Inui can mean the separation of man and wife. This, for example, is exactly what Lavan warns Yaakov of Inui. When Lavan tells Yaakov, I have this written down here somewhere, but when Lavan tells Yaakov in Perek Lamed Aleph in Sefer Bereishis, so he tells him, you know, you better be good when I'm gone and you're not going to be around me anymore. But he specifically uses the line, "Im ta'ane es benosai, im tikach nashim al benosai." So you can't be ma'ane my daughters, and you can't take other wives on my daughters. All the mefarshim explain that Lavan is saying, now that I'm not going to be here anymore, you need to stay loyal to my daughters. You need to stay married with them, continue the regular marital relations with them. Im ta'ane es benosai, inui. Means withdrawal between husband and wife, and don't take any other wives. Imtikach nashim al benosai. So they say that's what's happening over here. The inui means that what were the Egyptians doing? Leman anoso besiv losam. They were trying to separate the husbands and wives to make sure that finally the Jews stop having so many babies. Okay, that is probably the pshat of the pasuk. But a number of the mefarshim on the Haggadah quote the classic Medrash, you know, the Masa Nisim Haggadah, the Nitziv, the Maral Diskin, they all quote the Medrash. That why does the Torah link this to building Pisom and Ramses? And what does the Pasuk mean when it says, they made us work, Lima'an Anoso B'Siblosam? They made us work in order to afflict us. And they say that it means, It was Sisyphean labor. The Medrash, which says that the cities that Bnei Yisrael had to build were strategically placed in a spot where the ground wasn't strong. And all the time, the buildings would collapse, the foundations would disintegrate. The goal of what they did was not to build up their cities at all. Rather, they chose sites where it would be the most demoralizing project possible. And there are two pieces which this idea has about the unique evil of the Egyptians. And we came into the Pasuk, to the Haggadah, saying we know the Egyptians were bad. Well, all these Mefarshim explain. You have to understand, they hated us so much, they would rather the Jews suffer than the Egyptians benefit. Leman anoso besiv lo sam. They made us work so we would suffer. They could have optimized productivity. There was so much they could have done with us. They could have had us build good defenses. They could have had us build, you know, impressive public works. No, they're so desperate to grind us down, they'd rather do that than actually get something productive. Our suffering mattered more to them than their own benefit. And the second point which comes out of this medrash, which the Mefarshim are quoting, is how important productive work is. You could work from dawn until dusk. It can be backbreaking labor, but there is a basic satisfaction where at the end of the day, you can take a look at what you built and what you accomplished, and that can give you chizuk to keep going for tomorrow. What the Egyptians realized for Bnei Yisrael, if we want to break the spirit of the slaves, it's not just through the physical oppression. It's not even going to be through attacking the families. It's going to be by making them pour all this work and sweat and toil every single day, and it for being for nothing. If the work is not productive, then the spirit just disintegrates. If the work is productive, then there's something we can hold on to. That is what the Mitzvah noticed, a psychological insight. That is the second piece of Vayanu. Now moving on to piece number three, Vayanu Alenu Avodah Kasha. They gave us hard labor. And why do we have to darshan this? We know they gave us hard labor. That's what we're taught in nursery school. Again, the Haggadah here does not seem to clarify it so much. The Haggadah says, Kamash and Amar, Vayavidu Misraim es b'nei Yisrael befarach. They gave us backbreaking labor. We know that. What's the help in telling us about a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, which says they made us work very hard, by giving us a pasuk in Shmos that says they made us work very hard? This is known, nothing new here. What is the new lesson which is being extracted from the Pasuk in Shemos that Chazal are trying to give? So the Malbim takes one approach. The Malbim ties it back to that previous line. Remember, all those Mefarshim were saying Vaya'anunu meant it was Sisyphean labor. They made us work in a way that at the end of the day, we would not be able to see any progress. The Malbim says, Yeah, but also don't forget that it was physically torturous. So the Egyptians had a two-pronged strategy to grind us down. The work itself was brutal, avodah kasha, vayavidu b'parech, backbreaking labor. And not only was it physically backbreaking, but it was emotionally backbreaking because we had nothing to show for it at the end of the day, vayanu. That's the explanation of the Malbim. The Abarbanel has another suggestion, very creative suggestion, once again based on another passage in the Ramban. There's maybe one lesson from the shiur for tonight. It's that there probably should be a separate shiur just carefully going through all the Rambans in the first two parakim of Sefer Shmos. You'll do that another time. So the Abarbanel says, well, hold on a second. What's the pasuk? Well, I'll tell you what Chazal are trying to get at. Pasuk was, Kmash Ne'amar, Vaya'avidu Mitzrayim, Egypt. Gave us backbreaking labor. You know, the previous phrase that the Haggadah darshaned on Vaya'anunu was the Sarei Misim, the tax officers, the officials. Who do the officials work for? They work for Paro. Initially, and this is the theory of the Ramban, that the Abarbanel applies to the Haggadah over here, the initial labor was for the king. Royal labor, royal cities. Vayiben arei miskanos, the Paro. As the Pasuk said, we built the cities of Pisum and Ramses for Paro. The next stage in the enslavement, the next stage in the oppression, was moving from being slaves to Paro to being enslaved by every Tom, Dick, and Harry who lived in Egypt. This is what the Ramban writes. Now, every Egyptian was given the right, after the Jew comes home at the end of the day, doing his royal official government work, to having to then, you know, mow the lawn or clear the field of every Egyptian, act like the personal slave of every Egyptian. Abarbanel says that's what's happening over here. They have Idu Mitzrayim Espinei Yisrael Befarach. Now, why was this worse? Why did this take things to the next level? You know, why was it worse having to be slaves to every Egyptian to being slaves to Paro? So the Abarbanel and the Mayam Loes each give us one piece of the puzzle. The Abarbanel has a very interesting comment. He says, you know why things were better when they had to work for Paro? Because I should have put the exact text here. You have to like have it there to believe it. Abarbanel says, at least when you work for the king, there is some semblance of law and order. There are police, there are officers, and maybe a completely twisted, depraved government. But even the most depraved government is still a government. So at least there was some control. There was some order. There was somebody that they could appeal to. You know, may it not have been the fairest system, but it was better than nothing. Once they get turned over to Mitzrayim, every individual Egyptian can make a Jew do whatever he wants. It's anarchy. It's lawless. You know, just like the Mishnah Perkei Avos says, we should daven for the welfare of the government, because no matter how bad the Romans are, you know, better the Romans than anarchy, where man eats another man alive. Abarbanel says that's what's happening over here. You know, and something to think about too. Like, as the Mefarshim were explaining how every stage of the oppression got worse and worse and worse, you know, it's like things can always be worse, you know, because that's exactly the experience B'nai Yisrael had. Like, yeah, this was terrible. Then it got worse. This was terrible. Paro still finds a way to make it worse. That's piece number one. But the Mayam Loes, who quotes the same idea, he gives another insight. I thought this is very interesting. He says it's not just challenging from a physical perspective. Like physically, they went from the fair, noble government of Paro to the whims of every Egyptian. You know what the real struggle was? From the dignity. Once again, going to the emotional side. When you're working for Paro, okay, so we're enslaved to Paro, but at least we work for the king. You know, he's Paro. He's the most powerful man in the world. The great and glorious Paro of the empire of Mitzrayim, there's at least some piece of pride there. At least their master was a master, right? They go from working for Paro, for working for a bunch of mediocrities, a bunch of nivalim, a bunch of lowlives. See, the Mayam Loes says the attack on the dignity. It's one thing to be slaves to a master, to someone who's royal, to a king, to an impressive person, who everyone else has to respect as well. When you have some, you know, low yitzlach Egyptian who's he never got it going professionally, family is a mess, he doesn't have anything going for him in life, but that guy at the bottom of the social poll can go after, find some Jew on the street and say, hey, you know, I need you to come and take out my garbage right now. That strips out our dignity. And even if the physical labor may have been more difficult building massive cities than it was clearing a field for some Egyptian, again, on an emotional level, this took things to the next level. So those then are the three phrases that the Pasuk has, which the Haggadah is unpacking. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim, not just that they did evil to us, but that they slandered us, and that they made us out to be evil as a prerequisite for everything they were going to do. Vayaanunu, the affliction. We saw the psychological element to that, both physically and emotionally, seeing the work not even amount to anything. By Nua Alenu Avodah Kasha, the Egyptians doing it, right? So us having to work just for any random Egyptian, no matter how much of mediocrity or low life you may have been. So now, we can move to the second pasuk. This is the second pasuk for tonight, the third pasuk out of the four that we darshan in the Haggadah. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. He heard our voice, and he saw our affliction and the pressure that we were under. Then we commented on this last week, that while every single one of the other psukim takes a vast amount of the story and shrinks it down, right? How do we get to Mitzrayim? You look at Parshas Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash and Vayachi, one pasuk. How do we become slaves? The whole first two prakim of Shemos, one pasuk. How do we get taken out? Shemos va'eira bo b'shalach. That's next week, one pasuk. Now what the Haggadah does here is it takes two psukim at the end of Sefer Shemos, and it makes it just as much part of the story. So here we have, just have to appreciate before we see a word what Chazal are doing. What the Chumash is doing in Sefer Dvarim is taking that small piece where we cry out, and as we'll see, it's not even clear that we cry out to Hashem, but that piece of the Tefillah gets taken and magnified, and we have to appreciate that that is just as important a part of the story. Our davening to Hashem and Hashem answering it is just as pivotal as everything else when you try to recap the story. You can shrink it down to as concise and compact a story as possible. You can take out the makos. You can take out the details of the babies in the river. You can take out splitting the Red Sea. One thing we dare not take out is to mention explicitly, black on white, Torah Shebichsav, not waiting for Torah Shebalpeh, Torah Shebichsav, to write out, we daven to Hashem, and Hashem answered our cry. That needs to be there front and center. That's the most important thing, I think, for us to appreciate before even opening up the Haggadah. That said, let's open up the Haggadah and see what the Haggadah does with this. Because this phrase, once again, there's a lot to unpack. The redundancy, again, seems blatant. So he cried out to Hashem, but Nitzak al Hashem, okay, great. Elokei Avoseinu, for some reason we have to call him the God of our fathers, as if we didn't know that. The Yishma Hashem Eskoleinu, Hashem heard our voice. Okay, I can live with that. It's not so bad. Vayar Esaninu Veslachatseinu. And he saw our affliction and our pressure. There are many things he could have seen. Why specifically affliction and pressure? Why not just say he saw our suffering? Why say two things? No. The halacha is you're not supposed to go rogue in Shemon Esrei and say all these praises to Hashem, because the Gemara has a great line. You know, the Gemara has a story where some guy got up to be the chazan, and he, instead of just saying, you know, Hakel Hagadol Hagibor Bahanara Kel Yon in Shemon Esrei, he went on. And Hashem is this and this and this and this, and he thought he was being very from. And he said about, you know, 15 different descriptions of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I think it's Rabbi Chiya when he finishes, who says, is that it? What, you encapsulate everything that Hashem is? If you're going to go off the script of the Siddur and try to describe Hashem by yourself, it's just going to lead to chutzpah, because you're going to leave so much off. So once the Pasuk says, oh, no, not just that Hashem saw our suffering, but he saw our affliction and our pressure, well, he saw other things too. So why are these the specific words which the Torah uses to try to capture the whole story? So let's see what the Haggadah does. The Haggadah starts with Banitzak, Kamash Ne'amar, Vayhi Vayamim Harabim Ahim, was in those long days, many, many decades of slavery, Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, and we died, Vayanchu B'nei Yisrael Min Avodah, it's not, Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, Paro died, not we died, Paro died, Vayanchu B'nei Yisrael Min Avodah, we groaned from the work, Vayizaku, we cried out, Vatal Shavasam Elokim Min Avodah, and the cry rose up to Hashem from the world. Okay. So a whole lot to be said about that pasuk in Shemos, but let's try to keep things tied to the Haggadah for the next 24 minutes that we got here. So what the clear problem, I guess, with pasuk that the Mefarshim deal with is we've been slaves for a very long time. I mean, pasuk even said that. Vayhi bayamim harabim hahim. The suffering was terrible for month after month, for year after year after year. Finally, the Paro dies. And then all of a sudden, the Torah says, Vayanchu b'nei Yisrael min avodah vayizaku. All of a sudden, we couldn't take it anymore. We groan out and we daven. What's the correlation between the death of Paro and our crying out to Hashem? We've been suffering for a long time. What? You know, it's not like the slave of the work seems to have gotten any worse. Some of Hashem say it did. But it doesn't seem like it. It seems like Paro died. All of a sudden, we wake up, oh my gosh, life is terrible, let's cry out. What does one have to do with the other? The Ramban's explanation for this, very, very powerful idea, not surprisingly, is he says, what kept Bnei Yisrael going all that time? Year after year, as they're enslaved. What gave them hope? What gave them a light at the end of the tunnel? A thought that things could get better? Paro is getting older, and he's getting older. This Paro is going to die. And what's going to happen? Just like when this Paro came in, Yosef, there was a new administration, and he totally changed course, and we went from being the favored family of Yosef to being slaves. That's a particular problem with this Jew-hating Paro. But he's going to die. And once he dies and a new Paro comes in, things will get better. We'll have a new Paro who will remember Yosef, who's going to say, this is inappropriate. This is terrible. What a blight on the glorious society of Mitzrayim. It's going to turn things around. So that's what they're hoping for year after year after year. The crushing blow when finally Paro dies, the moment they were waiting for, and the very next Paro just continues the exact same policy of enslavement, that, says the Ramban, is the moment that broke B'nai Yisrael. That finally, is what caused them to, cry. Okay, so now we understand. We held it in for all that time. When we lost faith in things changing from a natural human political perspective, so then we daven. It should not have taken us so long to daven, but as we know, and as the Ramban himself is going to quote in a little bit, we were not in the best of spiritual shape during our time in Mitzrayim. So yeah, we should have davened earlier, but we didn't. Once we lost faith in man, then when we had no other hope left, we turned to Hashem. And as soon as it happens, the Torah says, "Vatal shavasam elokim min avoda." Right now, Hashem hears our tefillah, and now he's going to turn things around. That's one approach. The Barbanel and the Malbim read the pasuk a little bit differently, because they focus on the, they say, the Torah doesn't really say explicitly that we daven. If you read it carefully, vayizaku, they cried out. Lizok just means to call. It doesn't necessarily mean to pray, to daven, to cry to Hashem. The Sepharno doesn't even think that they davened at all. He thinks that B'nai Yisrael just cried out of pain, and Hashem heard that cry and turned things around. So the Barbanel and the Malbim say, no. Clearly, it means that they davened. That's exactly what the Haggadah, what the Torah in Devarim is telling us here. We davened. Vanitzak el Hashem. Okay, well, now we need to explain. If in Devarim we're told, Vanitzak el Hashem, we cried out to Hashem, why are we quoting a pasuk in Devarim, in Shemos, which just says, Vayizaku, they cried out? Barbanel and the Malbim have an amazing explanation. They say, what happened when Paro dies? Paro dies, and now everybody in Egypt has to cry. It is a national day of mourning for Paro. So everyone comes together, and everybody is weeping and bawling and crying. You know, you see these like videos from North Korea when Kim Jong-un died. Right? You see, they're like crying and crying and crying. What happens for B'nai Yisrael? They finally have an opportunity to cry, and they won't get in trouble. While they're enslaved, they're not allowed to cry out. But when everyone else in Egypt is crying, they can cry too. You know, in college, I read the Iliad, and the commentators to the Iliad point out that you have all these like enslaved captives over there. At the end of the book, when Achilles' best friend Patroclus is killed, and all the Greeks are crying, so all the Trojan women who they've taken as captives are also crying. And they explain what's going on in the story. You know, they're not able to cry. A slave can't cry over the fate that they have. But when the master is crying, that gives them a chance to cry for their own pain. You know, the Trojan slaves are not crying for the Greek who was killed. They're crying for themselves. But when they're crying, we get to cry. That's what the Malbim and Abarbanel say is happening here. Finally, the day when all the Egyptians are publicly mourning for Paro, so the Jews joined in. Paro, what's the country going to do? Such a loss. But what was the real cry? What did Hashem know? They write, Yodea Talumos. Hashem knows what we have in mind. The real cry we had in mind was weeping and calling out to Hashem to save us. Hashem is able to hear that, obviously. And then Hashem jumps in. The Mitziv just puts one little additional wrinkle into this pasuk as well. He has a very creative read. The Mitziv says, why Elokei Avoseinu? Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Avosin. Remember the pasuk said, we cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. We know Hashem is the God of our fathers. Why did the Torah have to tell us that? The Netziv says, read the pasuk as follows. Vanitzak el Hashem. We cried out to Hashem. Elokei Avosenu. That is the text of our tefillah. Says we were simple people. We didn't have any Torah. We had no Moshe Rabbeinu. We didn't know what to. No one taught us how to daven. We just called out Elokei Avosenu, the God of our fathers. That's all. That's just we cried out. We didn't have a fancy sitter, fancy texts, nothing from Tehillim, David HaMelech. There was nothing. It was the people coming together. The Netziv is another very, very important point. He says, you know, Vayiz Aku. The Netziv writes that Za'aka, it's not just to cry out. It means coming together. So, for example, and say for Shoftim or Shmuel, a couple of places where either Barak or Shaul is getting the Jews together, the army. So the Navi used the word Vayizak. You know, Barak is like Vayizak es Zvulun ves Naphtali, I think it was. So you cry out to assemble everyone together. The Netziv says, the Jews never had a day off. When you're slaves, they have to go to work every single day. They finally get a break. They get a day they don't need to go to work on the national day of mourning for Paro. And how do they spend that day? If I was a slave and I had been working and working and working, I probably would have just lain in the floor of my hovel or whatever. The Netziv says, no, the Jews get one day off. They get a day where they don't have to work. Right away, they come together. They come running together to daven to Hashem to cry out. Vayizaku, they come together, they cry out, Elokei Avosenu. They're not sophisticated. They're not knowledgeable. But they have this instinctive need to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when they do so immediately, Hashem answers the cry. Vayashma Hashem es kolenu, the pasuk continued to say. Hashem heard our voice. The Netziv writes, he heard the moans of the individuals. Vayashma Elokim es nakasam. So he heard our communal cry, and he heard the cry of the individuals. But the pasuk that the Haggadah continues with says, Vayashma Elokim es nakasam. Vayeskor Elokim es briso es Avraham es Yitzchak es Yaakov. So if Hashem heard our cry and our moans, why did he need to remember the covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? So the Mefarshim here, Barbanel and the Ritva, they quote the same idea which is in the Ramban, who says, well, we needed the covenant of the forefathers, we needed Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because despite our davening, we were still a spiritual basket case. We were still kind of a disaster. And I'm just going to share a screen for a second, because there's an amazing parak in Yechezkel, which it's black on white in Yechezkel. You know, we talk about the idea that we were that we worship idols in Egypt. And it's like, where do we know this from? Here it is, 1 second. The answer is, it's right here in Yechezkel Parakha. No, it's right here. So a group comes to Yechezkel there. It's, I think, 4 years before the Chorban. And they basically want Hashem to save Yerushalayim, and Hashem gets very angry, and Hashem says, here's something you should know. So the day I chose Yisrael, I made myself known to them in Mitzrayim. Rashi quotes Chazal to say, this is Aaron HaKohen. Aaron came with prophecy to Bnei Yisrael long before Moshe came on the scene. This is while we're there. Right? So they got the message. What was the condition? So Aaron said, Hashem will take you out of Egypt. Just, get rid of the idolatry. Stop impurifying yourselves with the idolatry of Egypt. They did not listen to me. They kept their idols in Egypt. As Gulei Mitzrayim lo azabu. It's black and white in Yechezkel. I thought, said Hashem, I would just wipe them out in Egypt. But I didn't. Well, I asked Laman Shemi, right? For the sake of my name, I didn't do that. So they wouldn't, I took them out anyway. Otherwise, it would look terrible for Hashem. The exact argument that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to give to Hashem a few months later after the golden calf, when he says, you know, it's going to look terrible for you, Hashem, if you wipe up an Yisrael. Hashem says he had given that argument to himself when despite all the idolatry and assimilation that we were insisting on doing, while we already had Nevi'im coming, telling us, Bnei Yisrael, do tshuva, and Hashem will take you out of Mitzrayim. And we never really did tshuva. We never got rid of the idols. We have to have bris mila before we're taken out of Mitzrayim. We lost a whole lot right there in Yechezkel. So Ramban and Mepharshim here quote, that that's why we had the tefila and we had all the suffering, but even with all that, we still needed the bris of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because if we're not going to get ourselves out of this, you know, we basically need all the help that we can get together. But I just thought this was amazing, because it's like Yechezkel just says it. And it's so interesting to think about. You know, we talk about we have to be Doresh, Leshvach, and Lignai. We have to like focus on the negatives and on the positives. It's a very interesting thing that the Chumash does not put this front and center. No, the Chumash does not tell the story of our, there are references to it. There are hints that you can pick up on. It's not hidden once you know to look for it. But the Chumash does not at all put a focus on the spiritual decay that we had in Mitzrayim. But Yechezkel puts it out there. Okay. So the last piece of the Haggadah for us to darshan is when the Torah says that Hashem saw our affliction, right? Vayar es angenu ve'es amalenu ve'es lachatzenu. He saw our affliction, our toil, and our pressure. So there are two, we need to figure out why these three, the affliction, toil, and pressure. And also, Mepharshim point out that we go from Hashem hearing to Hashem seeing, vayar. It's almost as if Hashem saw the things which we didn't daven for. So in the first, we're going to try to explain why aren't we davening for the specific things that the Haggadah is about to identify. So number one, the Haggadah says, what is Anyenu? And the Haggadah says, this is Precious Derech Eretz. This is the fact that the husbands and the wives either were separated from each other by the Egyptians, or they separated themselves from each other so that they would not have more children who would only go on to be killed. Like Rashi tells us that Miriam told her father Amram, why is Amram getting married after he seems to already have two children? And Rashi quotes that Amram had said, hey, the babies are being killed anyway, what's the point? And Miriam tells her father, that's not the way to act. You have to do what you're supposed to do. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam wants things to succeed, he will. So the Mepharshim argue how exactly the Jews were separated from each other, but that is the precious Derech Eretz. Anyenu, we referred before, can mean the separation of husband and wife. Now, why didn't we daven for that? Why did it have to be something that Hashem only saw, but not something that he heard us cry out of? We only daven, the Torah said, about the avoda. We only cried out from the labor. The Netziv says, I'll tell you why we didn't daven for that. We didn't daven for that because it's very embarrassing. And we felt discomfort coming before the Ribbono Shel Olam and saying, Hashem, the Egyptians are separating me from my spouse. That's something personal. That's something intimate. It was not something we felt the confidence or the comfort to bring forward even to Hashem. But Hashem knew what was in our hearts, even if we did not feel the confidence to put it on our lips. That is the explanation here of the Netziv. The Me'am Loes has a second explanation. His explanation explains all three things the Haggadah is about to quote in one fell swoop. Because after the Haggadah tells us, Anyenu is the precious Derech Eretz, is the separation of the spouses, then it is going to say, Es Amalenu, Elu Habbanim, the toil is our children, who we worked so hard to conceive and give birth to and raise, only for the Egyptians to murder them. Lachatzenu is going to be the dchak, is going to be the pressure, which we'll define what that is in 2 minutes. Me'am Loes says, we didn't daven about any of these things, because when you have a slave who is trying to survive day to day, hour to hour, there is nothing that is on his mind. He doesn't have the luxury of thinking about anything other than, how do I get through the next 5 minutes? Me'am Loes says, even what's happening to their children was not something that they were davening for, because, and you see this when you look, there's Holocaust literature that you see this kind of psychology in. When we're reduced to such a desperate state, it's like animalistic. We have no ability to do anything but focus on how am I going to survive. Everything else, the family, the children, the living conditions. I don't have the luxury of thinking about any of that. I need to think, how am I going to live through the next 2 minutes? The avoda, says the Me'am Lois. That's why we weren't able to daven for anything else. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that into account. That is the inui, the derech eretz. Okay. Next was Amaleinu Elu Habanim, was what the Haggadah explained. Amel, meaning toil, right? And fruitless toil, which we talked about how devastating that that can be. Why didn't we daven for that? Ma'am Loez gave his explanation. The Netziv and the Rav have a different understanding of why this is something that we didn't daven for. This is something which here in 2023, about 80 years after the Shoah, is something which is extremely resonant. The Netziv and the Rav say, like the Ramban, that the decree against throwing the babies in the river was not something that lasted a very long time at all. That episode was only a few months long. Now, Hashem Yirachim, how many Jewish babies were killed in that amount of time, however much it was. But it was already decades ago. Right through the Netziv and the Rav, we didn't daven for that because it was old. And there was more recent trouble for us to focus on, even if it wasn't as bad, even if it wasn't as severe. And we can think, you know, how there's so much that we look at that the Jewish people faces in every single, Yisrael and the threats that we all face. The distance between the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is when the Jews were being thrown into the river, according to the Ramban, and the slavery, and the episode of crying out in the second parak Be'ez of Shmos, is 80 years. The Shoah was 80 years ago. It's the same amount of distance. So right then, it's right the Rav. We stopped davening. We never got what we want. We never saw redemption. We never saw revenge. We never saw Hashem step in to save us. But we moved on. We moved on to the next. And we stopped remembering. And we stopped davening for the old things that happened. And we may have moved on from that. But that's what the Torah is saying here. Vayar es amalinu. Hashem saw what happened to us. He saw the things that we were no longer davening for. We may have moved on from it, but the Ribono Shel Olam did not move on from it. It's something for us to remember when the Torah tells us a few parshios later that we need to remember Amalek for all time. Hashem remembers what happened to us, even if we feel like it may have been ancient history. We need to do the same. The last one, Es Lachatzenu, and this feels like a letdown. After all the intense, impressive things, the slavery, the Nile River, killing the bay, all the stuff, we end with this like kind of a weird phrase, no? As salachatzenu, the pressure, zehadchak. It's that we were forced. Hashem tells Moshe, yeah, I've also seen the pressure that Hashem has put them under. It's a bit of a strange way to end. Like, really, that's it? Some nondescript, generic pressure. I mean, I don't even know what that means. Pressure, we go through pressure all the time. Lachatz, you know, what even is that? So the Malvim just gives us a very good technical definition of the word, and then we'll look quickly at what a couple of Mefarshim and how they apply that over here. The Malvim says that lachatz should be defined as when something is insufficient. You don't have enough. So for example, when the Navi talks about somebody who's in prison and is being given minimum rations, so it says they're given lechem tsar umayim lachatz, right? Just some dry bread and a little bit of water, but not really enough to survive. So their lachatz is being used for insufficient water. When Bilam is riding on his donkey, so and his donkey is trying to get away from the malach, and Bilam's leg gets crushed against the wall. So the pasuk says, "Atelachatz regel Bilam alakir." His foot is pressed against the wall. There, it's being used to mean insufficient space. Here's the donkey. Here's the wall. No room for poor Bilam's leg. So, what is the lachatz? What is insufficient here that we suffer from? So the Malbim writes, we know it's not food. One thing Bnei Yisrael had in Egypt is they had food. There was so much food in Egypt. We didn't go hungry. At least we didn't go hungry. So what was it? What was the lachatz? What was the pressure? What was the insufficiency that we had to suffer from? So a number of the Mefarshim say, it means living space. Initially, it was a bracha for us to be in Goshen. However, as we multiply and multiply and multiply, Goshen becomes the first ghetto. There isn't enough space. We just pressed and pressed and pressed. Now, the Netziv, which is, he's following his consistent approach to this whole pasuk. He's saying, well, why was this something we didn't daven for? So the Netziv said, we didn't daven when we were separated from our spouses because we were too embarrassed. We didn't daven about the Nile River and the babies. It was too long ago. He says, we didn't daven about the fact that we were so pressed into tiny little compressed living space. Because he says, when you're born that way, when you're born in compressed, oppressive living conditions, you don't even realize that that's a problem. We were so downtrodden, we didn't even realize the state of our own misery. The Rav writes about this in terms of the tragedy of slavery in general. The slave who's so ground down, he doesn't even realize anymore how ground down he actually is. That's one approach. But a number of the other Mefarshim say that what we didn't have enough of was time. What the Egyptians did was take away our time. So the Ma'am Loes, for example, says, we had so much work to do, and they didn't give us enough time to do it. The Abarbanel writes, we never had an off day. We never had off. You know, we had, before the Netziv said, we got one off day in 80 years when Paro died. But Abarbanel says, you want to know why we never daven for this? Because that is not something that's obvious. You don't see the moment when the person never has a minute to breathe. You don't see the lack of rest. But that exhausts. It exhausts like crazy. It's terrible. It's torture to never have space. And of course, what does Hashem do as soon as we're out of Mitzrayim? Is we're given Shabbos. But that is something, it's like, you know, it's like sleep. It's the exact same as sleep deprivation. It's invisible to the outside eye, but it completely, completely grinds us down, not being given any time. Rav Soloveitchik writes, this is why, what is Hashem's, what's the very first mitzvah we're given? HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim. In many ways, psychologically, the most severe oppression the Egyptians did was taking away any time. We had nothing. We were on the clock for Paro 24-7. What happens? We're given control of our own time. And not only are we given control of our time, but there's really no more dramatic mitzvah where B'nai Yisrael are in control than the calendar. You know, according to the heavenly objective measure, Rosh Hashanah should be on a Monday. But if the witnesses come in and declare the month to be on a Tuesday, Rosh Hashanah is going to be on a Tuesday. We turn from being victims in the time world of Paro to being masters of time in and of ourselves. And the last idea, I think there's once again something to think about leading into next week, the discussion of redemption, comes from the Rashbats, one of the late Rishonim. He says, what does it mean, the lachat? What was so terrible about the pressure, the insufficient, not giving us enough time? And Rashbats says the breaking point, and this is true, think about it in terms of the Chumash, in terms of the narrative of the slavery, the breaking point was when Paro asked the impossible. After Moshe and Aaron finally come to Paro, and then he turns around and he tells the Jews, you have your quota of bricks, I'm not going to give you any straw. When we're asked to do the impossible, we are not given, objectively, we are not given the time to do what we need to do. That is, no pun intended, the straw that breaks the camel's back. You want to talk about psychological torture. We could talk about the torture of having to work back-breaking labor, working for every low yitzlach Egyptian, labor which has no productive end, everything that's happening to our families. But the most downtrodden piece of all of it is being given a mission which is at its core impossible. And once that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Gamar Isias Alachatz, I've seen everything. And now I've seen Paro take it to the next level where even if they put in everything they possibly can, they can't do it. Now is the time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come in. And of course, this is not the Rashbats. I think this is a suggestion we can make. What is the Mida Keneged Mida? What does Hashem mete out to Paro? Paro, you demand the impossible from B'nai Yisrael? Watch what I'll do to you. Watch as HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the impossible to Paro with the open nature-changing miracles which have never before been seen really at all. You demand the impossible from B'nai Yisrael. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to do the impossible to you. Okay, so Yashkach, everybody. If you don't mind, just before you log off, if you could just quickly put in the chat, if you, A, plan on coming next week, no pressure, but if you plan on coming next week, just let me know if Sunday or Monday works better for you, or you can send me an email, and then, God willing, the next day or two, we'll put out when the shiur for next week is going to be to wrap up our discussion. So, Yashkach, everybody, thank you so much.